Alamedi's for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket. Trimboli. What vision.
Marth blasts.
Yes. And Zic.
Miljevic.
Scrabble up. Beautiful ball.
Here's Mazanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Pioneers here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. Rodrigo Rodriguez sitting in for a pioneer of sorts, a pioneer,
definitely
no doubt.
A pioneer, yeah.
George Danikian. G'day to you, George Kotsanis. Welcome to you.
Welcome, Rodrigo, to our show, yeah. Our little show.
It's nice to be here, mate. I love this show. I've been listening to it since it started with you and George, and it is one of my favourite shows here on FNR. So
thank you. Tonight, I'm glad someone is listening.
Yeah, no. I listen live. I listen live because we do the Diego's before,
yeah.
And then I'm in the car and just listening to your dulcet tones. So, and it's been some fantastic shows. But tonight, we've got a very, very special guest, as we always do. One of the greats of the game, one of the great NSL stars, South Melbourne, Juventus, Charlie Egan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You're too keen, boys.
Oh, well, we're going to be really kind.
Gel.
We want you to talk tonight because this is your show. This is all about really getting a feel for the legend that you are and were back in the day. But how do we find you today? How are you going? How are you travelling? What are you up to?
Well, what with the utilities, gas company, donor group. So I've been doing that for about the last 25, 30 years.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And so I knew you were a meter reader there for, you were parking.
That's correct,
parking.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, not parking. not tall enough for parking.
I just wanted to clarify that because
that would wreck the popularity.
That would make you a bit richer, though.
Grey ghost.
Yeah, no, well, while we're on a bit of today, you're currently coaching, which you've been doing for a very long time, and we'll cover that in retrospect, but you're currently coaching at Barnstonworth United?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. All right, so tell us a little bit about what you're doing there and tell us some of the great stuff that Barnstonworth are doing because they're a very famous club for raising money for a lot of charities. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, just a couple of quick facts. But, the club was founded in 1989, and they were named after a UK TV series, Ripping Yarns, where Golden Gordon starred following his beloved cellar dwellers, Barnstonworth. I think back at the start, the guys used to wear the original kit, the long black pants with the handlebar moustaches. And since then, obviously, the club has grown into a charity monster. They do a lot of good things for
them. They do some great work, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I believe up to date, I think they've generated over $250,000 for charity since the inception. So,
what, for multiple charities, or is there a specific one you guys focus on?
Look, I'm sorry, I'm reading off a kind of spreadsheet because I've been relatively new to the club. I was there 10 years ago and I played for them for one season. I've got a lot of friends down there, but they do a lot of unheralded work. They don't sort of advertise or promote themselves. They just go and get the job done, so they've been, for example, we've got a fundraiser, an 11-a-side tournament on the 8th of April, which is to help raise funds for an 11-year-old boy with an aggressive form of cancer. So, anyone who wants to get more details on the charities that they're running can contact the president, Sean Risa, or look up the Barnstonworth United website. So, yeah, like I say, the type of charities they support is the Les 20 Mound Foundation, St Vincent's de Paul, Sunshine Hospital, Peter Mack, and many more. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And I mean, I can see your face. Our listeners can't, but this means a lot to you. And you've had a lifetime in football, and it just seems to me that the sense of community that football has bringing, how important has that been to you throughout your entire journey?
Well, look, to be quite honest, to just touch on the coaching, I'd actually finished coaching. I gave quite enough of my family's gave quite enough of their time up for me to follow sort of
I can imagine.
My passion, if you want. But the Barnstonworth thing came along because, one, for what they do, and two, I mean, it's one night a week training, game on the weekend. It still sort of feeds my addiction, if you like. But also, yeah, it's a feel good club. Yeah, it really is. So, You know, I'm getting the football side of it, but you're doing something good as well. So
that is terrific.
And every small bit counts, you know.
No, it is. And obviously I've got some friends down there and have been involved, well, played against them and involved in some charity days over the time. And I know intimately how much great work they do for the community. And guys like Keith Charlesworth,
yeah,
who was
Keith
there
Charlesworth,
at the beginning,
yes,
and is
yes.
now involved in the league at a higher level, but he played a big part in Jason, who we spoke about
Jason
earlier.
And, Conrad
as well, yeah. So well done to all those guys who've kept that going and continue to do it, and well done to everyone involved down there.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing. And like you said, feel good is the perfect word for it, or the two words for it. But they do such a great job, and it's terrific.
Yeah, just, I mean, even socially off the park, they do a lot. They do a lot of stuff naturally that... I've certainly tried to incorporate at clubs coaching in the past, like making players stay behind and take part in a Thursday evening meal and get that team bonding. These guys just do it automatically. We've got the girls team, a ladies team, over 35s, Premier League. We've got like 6-7 sides. And on a Wednesday night, everyone's in there chipping in and taking part, you know, so it's...
This is the power of football, isn't it?
Well, it's a real big family down at Barnsonworth.
But this is the power of football. Yeah. You know, Carlos talks about the 3.1 million, and we upped it tonight to 3.2 on the Diegos. There's 3.2 million
just
people.
Adding it to it.
Yeah, you're adding to it. That's the power of the game. And it's people like you that we want to talk to, because you guys are the ones that, you know, created, you know, the legacy or continue the legacy. But we're so focused on the stars in the A-League at the moment. And we just wanted to spend an hour or so with you so that our listeners who remember you, and some that don't, like, you know, Pedro on the panel here tonight, who's a young man who...
It was probably born yesterday.
Yeah, was born yesterday. who's, you know, seen your name or read your name or heard his, you know, father speak about you. But to have you here on a show like The Pioneers is just wonderful. And I think the best place to start talking about you is your junior club. You know, back at, what is it? Kurt?
You pronounce it.
Oh, well, I'll try. Kirkintilloch. Is that, or Kirkintilloch? How would you say that?
Kirkintilloch is it.
Oh, Kirkintilloch.
That's the town.
That's
but
rolls off the tongue.
They were known as Rob Roy.
Rob Roy. See,
that makes it a lot easier.
I should have said that.
Yeah, but, should have done that.
But take us back to that. How old were you when you started and what made you fall in love with the game?
Well, my dad was a professional. He played professional. And look... In Scotland, everybody's in love with the game. It's Celtic and Rangers, and you're brought up on it, and you get spoon-fed it from the cradle, if you like. Look, I was a passionate Celtic supporter. I was quite fortunate I found myself quite fortunate that I was brought up in the era where Celtic was the best team in Europe. So, unbeknown to me, I was watching the best team in Europe through the 60s, 70s, so... You know, I suppose it'd be like being living in Barcelona and being brought up on Messi and, you know, that wonderful side they've got. So we're kind of spoiled with sort of the upbringing we had watching it.
Yeah. It probably explains why we had so many Scotsmen on this show.
That's true.
That era obviously produced, Scotland were exporting footballers ad hoc to every country, especially the UK, especially out here. And those footballers like yourself have made a huge path in all of those countries. So we have to have Scotsmen on because there were so many that made an impact on our game here. But just going back to, obviously, you were playing for Rob Roy.
Yeah.
Kirkintilloch.
Kirkintilloch, Rob Roy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you were the only Catholic boy in that team, is that right?
Well, Rob Roy was, how could I put it politely, it was a Rangers sort of stronghold,
yep.
that corner of where I lived. I played with a team called Camsey Black Watch, who were a sort of under-21 side that was a great feeder to a lot of the talent scouts used to come there. And Rob Roy was sort of down the road from Camsey Black Watch. The standard they played was similar to, they say it's junior football, but junior football back there in that sort of meaning was like non-league.
Yep.
It was a load of old pros dropping down from, and then a mixture of old pros with sides like Celtic, Rangers, Hearts. They might fire them out, a loan out, potential 16, 17, 18 year olds to get that physical experience in playing against men. And I, look, I think that contributed in that era of the 60s and 70s to all the great footballers that was produced, because, I mean, the Lisbon Lions, I think every one of them played the junior football.
Yep.
As opposed to now, I think they're all playing academies and nothing seems to be happening.
Okay. Now, while you were there, being in a Rangers feeder club,
yes,
Rangers did come knocking. And I know you can't use the exact terminology that your dad used.
Yeah, I can't repeat what my dad says.
But it was something that went along the rhymes of no, was it?
Yes, there was a
standard Russian.
Yeah,
is it?
A letter L in the alphabet that he used. Right. Rangers just assumed because I played there that you were
one of them.
I was one of them. Yeah, let's put it that way. And they came in, wanted me to sign with them after the game. I was a bit excited because all the chairman told me was there's a club here want to sign you.
How old were you at the time?
Speak to your dad. 18.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, the drive home was a bit disappointing until they named the team, and then...
That's fair enough. And then you found yourself on the right side of town. You got a trial at Celtic.
Yeah, when I was about 18, I played for Scotland Amateurs, and we met the Scotland Schoolboys in the final of the tournament at Falkirk's Park, Brockville. And... after the game, Celtic offered me a trial for a month. So I was quite excited because they just went into the end of the season. So I had to wait on the off season to then go in and join in pre season. At the time, Jock Steen was the manager. But like, it's just one of those things that happens, a bit of fate. In the off season, Jock Steen was involved in a car accident and change of manager. Billy McNeil took over and. Look, I got in there for a month and did pre-season for a month, but it was pretty much just them honouring the fact that I was told to come in for a trial, you know. I mean, he's taken over a new side. The last thing he's worried about is that a young trialist coming in. So that kind of broke my heart a little bit. But, you know, football, there's a lot of twists and turns. And, yeah, from there I ended up signing for Berwick Rangers in the Scottish First Division.
So you had an opportunity to go to England, though?
Yeah, I had to go down to... I'd been down at Aston Villa. It was 1981. That was the year they won the league. So I trained down there for a fortnight. And I had to go back down again. But, look, what I had to weigh up was the 1,000 kids that went down there opposed to what Berwick offered me. The coach actually came out and spoke to me personally and says, look, we'll give you guaranteed football, first team. If a club comes in, we won't stand your way. So to weigh up getting first team football in Scottish First Division, which was, I mean, back then there was only like the top half of, it wasn't the Premier League then, top half of the division was full time pros, and the rest were all semi-professional, like Hibernian and Hearts and Dundee. So look, after weighing up, I decided to sign for Berwick, and my debut, they announced the League Cup fixtures kicked off the season in Scotland, and the second name out of the hat was Berwick Rangers. So the first name out of the hat was Aberdeen, and that was my debut. I had to go to Pittodrie and play Sir Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen at Pittodrie. And I'll never forget, we went up there and we went a goal down, then I scored to equalise, then they went 2-1 up, and I'm thinking, you know, we're doing well, we've got a good chance, you know. My dad, who came to all the football, couldn't make it that day because working shifts and all the way up to Aberdeen. We finished up losing 8-1.
Well.
when I got home, my dad's like, oh, what kind of team have you got there? And I said, well, you've not seen Aberdeen because...
Yeah, they were starting to build a great side.
Well, not starting. That season, they beat Rangers 5-0 in the semis of the Scottish.
Okay.
They beat Celtic 4-1 at Celtic Park in the league, and then they went on and won the European Cup Winners' Cup by beating Real Madrid 2-1. So yep. I think getting beat by 8 was a fair
who was some of the
was
players,
a fair effort.
Who were some of the players in that team?
They had Jim Leighton, goals.
They
were all household names. Yeah. Willie Miller, Gordon Strachan.
Alex McLeish
was at the back.
Mark McGee
up front. So
Eric Black, I think, was a young guy coming through at the time.
Eric Black played, yes. Yeah. Doug Rugby, they were just something.
I think you've just named 11 You know,
they were a superstar team.
Well, back in those days, you couldn't name 11 because there was none of this 23-man squads. It was the same team every week now, so it's made it easier. But no, it was a fantastic experience because, let's say, Matt McGee was at the same school as me. He was like two years above me. So when I actually left, the first professional club I went to was Dumbarton at 16. And McGee went to Morton before he went to Aberdeen. So, yeah, it was good sort of catching up with him, but I never got much chance to see him. He was too busy up the other end scoring goals.
That is a boy who's now doing okay. You've clearly had dinner, right? You found your way to Frankston in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. How does that all tie up?
Yeah, well, again, just fate. I mean, I lost, there was a change of management at Berwick. I was still there, but at that time I was retrenched. We worked for a big computer company, and it was basically last in, first out. So there was a load of retrenchments, and about a fortnight after I lost my job, I was still earning enough money playing part-time, because it was, you know, with your job, you were earning more money part-time playing with Berwick. So I was doing well until I lost my job. And that just coincided with a guy called John Pride was over in the UK looking for players, and he got me recommended from Pat McCluskey, who played for Celtic and who was out here playing with his brother Danny, and he just landed on my doorstep and talked to the Australian thing, and I thought, why not give it a go? So yeah, it was just out of the blue, just one of those things.
So how old were you at the time? 18, 19?
By that time I was 20.
Oh, okay, right, so 20, a bit older. So
right, bold age of 20.
Yeah. Oh, look, I mean, I wasn't like a today 20 because I'd never been away from home.
There is a difference. Oh, right, okay.
I'd never been away from home. England and back, that was my stretch, and I was homesick and down there. Coming to Australia was basically the first time I sat on a plane, so, and away from the family. I come from a big family, you know, so... when I arrived here, I just couldn't wait to get back to Scotland.
Right, a bit.
But then when I went back, I couldn't wait to get back here. So,
tell us about your first season at Frankston.
Yeah, look, it was...
Well, tell us what you thought when you arrived at Frankston. Well, you've come halfway around the world.
He couldn't wait to get back home.
He couldn't wait to get back home, so...
Well, look, it was exciting because I was away from home, and I was basically... I was looked after by good friends out here, but I still had to find a job and sort of get my bearings on where to live, stuff like that. It helped me grow up away from the football side. It was good for me to get a bit of independence myself. The football back then was very good. The state league was a very good standard. There was a lot of powerful sides. There was George Cross with Johnny Gardner, and you know, and Gus McLeod, and you know, you could
Melbourne Croatia, Green Gully,
and they were all strong, and they all played good stuff. There wasn't really, we were the easy beats, if you like. But I thought we had a decent side, you know. Yeah. I enjoyed the first year, you know. I mean, I scored a few goals, and
you did that for fun throughout your whole career, which we'll talk about.
We're just going to go to a break. I do want to come back to the Frankston days because there's a good end to this Frankston.
Definitely.
Story.
We'll talk much more about your Australian experience, and we'll get into South Melbourne and everything else that you're doing at the moment. You're listening to The Pioneers with the great Charlie Egan, with George Kotsanis and Rodrigo Rodriguez here on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Butzianis, no call! Score! Salamidi for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes, it's it!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Mazanic. They haven't! They might have won it!
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back. You're on The Pioneers on Football Nation Radio. Rodrigo Rodriguez, George Kotsanis, and our special guest, Charlie Egan, the two Sunshine Boys, or two Braybrook Hills Boys, as we might be known, hosting together for the first time.
Yeah, George, you take the boys out of the West, but you can't take the West out of the boys,
correct, 100%.
I'll give that a tick.
Well done. We just he had a great season at Frankston. You underplayed it. You said it was a good season. It was a great season. And you won the Rothmans medal.
Yeah.
The best player in the league. So it can't be too bad for a first season.
Yeah, well, look, the Rothmans medal was sort of just one of those big surprise events. I mean, I wasn't aware of award nights and what the actual Rothmans meant, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at some of the footage, the people around me knew what was going on because they knew the way it worked.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it before. It was my first.
Something different to
something
you.
To, yeah, being yeah. there. The 3-2-1 votes, and it was quite exciting looking back on it more than being there on the night because I didn't really know what had happened until it finished. But yeah, it was.
When they're announcing your name and putting a medal around your neck.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, free, you know, every game they go through and they give the votes, and obviously it's.
And you're in some really good company with some of the previous and winners before and after you, like Vince Bannon, Paddy Bannon, John Gardner, Stefan Miller, Jimmy McLean. I mean, really, that's esteemed players. They're great players, they were.
Look, it is an honour. I mean, you look back, as you say, and you see, I mean, like every player will tell you it's a team game and et cetera, et cetera. But when you honours really only kick in at the end of your career when you're looking back. Mm. I don't think too many people look at the time and say, oh, yeah, I won the Rothmans medal. It doesn't sort of grab you till years later when you're finished. You think, oh, yeah, I did win that, you know. So,
and well done on that.
And I think I can speak for a lot of players. I think they would have the same view what I've got. It's not an award at the time that you're looking and think, oh, big deal. And that's not to sort of demean the honour.
No.
That's totally.
And history
respect,
will show that,
respect
that
the honour.
It was a great honour for you, but the history of it and the winners that there show that it was a top level, top class award. That got you into the old NSL. A couple of teams come calling.
Yeah, again, it just fate plays a part in soccer. Like you just touched on earlier, there's not the social media. I mean, I think this country was lucky back then. They had the Soccer Action, which was a first-class soccer production. And I just to get away from the question, I don't think they've got anything today that matches the Soccer Action and the sort of full coverage it gives to everything.
No argument there. Everyone loves the old Soccer Action.
So I think it was more word of mouth. I think the NSL clubs were aware that there was these foreigners coming out every year and three at a time and then be made into permanent residents. And I was a bit fortunate. I was playing with Jed Bannon, brother of Vince and Pat. And I think Vince, down watching his brother, recommended me to...
The royal family, as we know.
The royal family, yeah. Well, you know, they were terrific to me. So John Margaritis came down and had a look and the rest, you know, they got me up and... agreed to sign with them.
Tell us about walking into the dressing rooms the first time at South Melbourne. What were you confronted with?
Yeah, well, I knew when I was going to sign for South Melbourne Hellas. Look, I'm not arrogant, but I believed in my ability. I was actually told not to sign for them because the reason was they just signed everybody. They had George Campbell, Branko Bujovic. They had Steve Wooden from overseas. They had like five forwards. You could only play two. And I just thought, well, no, I'm confident enough. If I get a go, I can do it, you know. So I didn't take an easy option by signing with them. But when I first walked in the dressing room, to be honest, I was just gobsmacked when I seen Alan Evans because I watched him on television. He was, I don't know if he's aware of who the man is. He was a Liverpool legend. First £100,000
teenager.
In these days, he's the highest paid. Well, not the highest paid. Highest transfer. I can remember sitting watching Liverpool play Bayern Munich in a. Correct me if I'm wrong. Could be a quarter final European
that's
Cup.
Right, yeah.
And he scored a hat trick playing against Franz Beckenbauer. And I'm thinking, geez, well, am I here to clean his boots? Or you know, the guy was just a legend. You know.
Yeah.
So look, I was excited just meeting him. To start with,
I can imagine.
You know, so and then other blokes I knew from Scotland down the track. Jimmy Shearer had played with Scotland and Dundee and Aberdeen, and Johnny Stevenson had played with Hearts.
Yep.
I'd seen them. I didn't know them personally. I'd seen them back in Scotland, so I knew the players at Hellas were good pedigree, and then made Branko Bujovic I'd seen on television with the Australian team, and George Campbell Aberdeen, and you know there was. there was a lot of real talent.
Star-studded team, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was real talent there.
George has been on the show, obviously.
We've had Georgie here, and we'd love to get Branko Bulovic here, but that's just in my dreams, I think. But tell us about your first season, and obviously you got a very popular or very famous coach come down at some point.
Yeah, my first season, I had to kind of wait for my chance. I got the semi-final of the Buffalo, is it the Buffalo? Ample Cup.
Ample Cup, and then it became the Buffalo, yeah.
And we played Morwell, and I got a hat-trick, so I thought it'd be a chance to start in the final, but I wasn't. I was on the bench. And then we played Heidelberg in the final, and I think leading up to that period, Heidelberg had the wood over Hellas because...
For a little while they had,
Gary Colin and Jimmy Tansey and all these blokes. Look, we managed to beat them 2-1. I came off the bench, I scored a winner, and then I got a chance in the first league game, and then I scored a few goals in the first league game, and it just went, led on and on and on. So I suppose if you're scoring goals, you can't be replaced, so I just stayed in, and that was basically it.
All right, so had Tommy Docherty come down at some point. He joined South Melbourne.
Yeah, Tommy.
That would have been an interesting time for you.
Yeah, Tommy Docherty. Again, one of the legends of world of football. You're just happy to spend time in their company. If I'm perfectly honest, he didn't really come, to take the football seriously. He just came down. He was super funny.
And was he for a party, was he?
He was here for a good time.
Yeah, of course.
But, I mean, everyone round about him benefited from sort of listening to his stories and, spending time with him because, I mean, you got the guys handled the greats, Best and, I think, was it Dennis Law and all these guys who's got that era, so...
It couldn't have been too bad if he coached Manchester United, Chelsea and the like, so he couldn't have had... Can't have been too bad, but he was probably on a road show by the time he got to the
show. Yeah, well, look,
he
just loved an audience. I mean, I know he's doing the dinner speeches back home, and I've actually been on YouTube and listened to a few, and he's as hilarious as Billy Connolly, some of the stories, I mean, I couldn't really repeat them. Probably one, we went to, just a quick one, we went to Wollongong to play Wollongong. And we arrived at the hotel, and Hellas always put us up in good accommodation. We got good meals, and we were well looked after. But Tommy says to Leo, he says, look, if you're saying that this is a Manchester night of Australia, we're not eating here. He says, I want you to get taxis organised, and we're going to the best Chinese place in Wollongong. So
Chinese.
So Manchester United of Australia.
So Leo didn't want to argue with him because of who he was. So we ordered the taxis, and we went off to a Chinese in Wollongong, and... One thing led to another, and the boys, Tommy asked, does anybody want a drink? So he says, it's all right, lads. So a couple of the guys had a few drinks, which was not the normal. Tommy had a few bottles of wine, so we stayed at the Chinese place to be kicked out. So the following morning, we woke up, as we normally do in the morning, on away games. We put the training kit on and we get ready for the morning session. So we're all sitting outside on the wall, nice sunny day, waiting on Tommy coming out, but... Unbeknown to us, Tommy wasn't aware this was the procedure. So I think it was Arthur Zantopoulos was the captain, went up and knocked on his door, and Tommy came out, and he was like Homer Simpson with big white pants on, underpants. That's all he had on, big pair of white underpants. We'd woke him out of sleep, and we just said, boss, what's happening? He says, well, what do you mean, what's happening? He said, we're training this morning, and Tommy's training. He says, yeah, we normally do something in the morning of the match. He goes, oh, okay. So he turned and he looked, and there was a big hill. He says, look, walk up there, walk down, and I'll see you at breakfast. And he went back to his bed.
You're interrupting his slumber and his hangover.
Yeah, so that pretty much summed up how serious Tommy was, So,
just going back to that era and just watching the games and now looking back on them, on YouTube or television, men looked like men in those days. I mean, you all looked and played older than you were, but I mean, what was the camaraderie like in amongst the squads? Because the NSL at that time was going really well.
Yeah, look, there was a great interaction between clubs. It wasn't just the camaraderie with the players. I mean, there was a lot of local sort of the Windsor Castle and Chevron. There was a lot of place where all the teams came together, and you got to speak to the players that you played against, and
and got to know each other.
Guy kicked you, and
but then you had a drink.
His hand, of course.
Yeah, it was like you said. It was play like men. You know, yeah. you could be thumped by someone, and then on the way off, where are we going? And we all cut. There was no sort of no hissy fits or none of this sort of panic mania that goes on now. You know, they're rolling all over the place and. Yeah,
it was a different era, wasn't it? And I mean, South Melbourne back then. A lot of our listeners will remember South Melbourne from that era. We talked about the Manchester United of Australia, but it wasn't too far wrong, was it?
Look, I don't know if I should open up a can of worms. When the A-League thing was proposed. My feeling was clubs like South Melbourne and Melbourne Knights should have been given an opportunity because, you know, they played the card of we're trying to make it more sort of multicultural or whatever. But, I mean, South Melbourne Hellas is what it is. It's if the grandfather supports South Melbourne Hellas, the father will support them and the son will support them. So that support will never wane, you know what I mean? It's like Scotland. I mean, you're Celtic or Rangers and you are because of your upbringing. And South Melbourne Hellas could fill a stadium every week, 20,000. A-League clubs these days aren't. So you could imagine if you gave South Melbourne Hellas back then the tools that these other A-League clubs have got, like full-time training, more marketing.
Admin and rah, rah, rah.
I mean, and also don't forget, when we went away with South Melbourne Hellas, as Melbourne Croatia did as well, not just South Melbourne Hellas, you had the potential to get support in other states because the Greeks would come in that state and support you as well.
Yep.
Melbourne City don't have that. Adelaide don't have that. When Adelaide got away, if they don't take a bus down from Adelaide, no one supports them in Melbourne. Yep. You know, so like that.
There's a little bit to be taken from the old and kept with the new, so that
Like this isn't a five minute debate. But what I'm saying is they weren't given an opportunity. It was just a new.
Yeah, it's that.
In my view.
It's that generational tribalism that we're craving at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, we really are because we look at other codes and think, you know, if only we had that tribalism, that generational support that you spoke about, you know. So I think it's a on-topic conversation that you raise.
And some valid points. Mm. Sorry to jump, but not long after you got to South Melbourne and you had your up and down the hill with Tommy Docherty and the Chinese food, Socceroos.
Yeah,
you get picked for the B team first. Is that am I on the money there or?
Yeah, they had a sort of theory to save expenses back. Well, you've got to remember back then it was again they didn't have the dollars, so they were trying to sort of split it up and make camps like a Melbourne camp, a Sydney camp, and so forth. And then they had the B team and the A team, and the guys playing with the B team that belonged in the A team, and so forth. Yeah. They were exciting times because there was a few good tournaments took place in Melbourne with Juventus coming out and Heracles and
Rangers.
I was looking forward to Rangers. So
the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was a big tour.
Clubs all over the joint. Yeah, that was really exciting. Yeah, yeah.
When you first got into the squad? Do you recall?
Yes, I think the squad that was going to go on the world tour was selected from that pool of players that represented Biondi.
Yep.
So then the thinking was at the end of it, the coaching panel had to sit down and go through every player and then decide what guys went overseas. You know.
Okay. And what are your recollections of not only that tour but your first taste of international soccer with the Socceroos and one Frank Garrock?
I spent a lot of time with Eddie Thompson, God rest him. He was more our coach, and they had a kind of structured good cop, bad cop
sort
of thing. It wasn't a deliberate play, it just was genuinely
that type
of stuff. Look, Frank Arnott, you've got to respect what he did. His methods were a bit erratic, but they worked for him. Eddie was more sort of methodical, and then we had John Margaritis, who came and did some work as well. So, yeah, look, when you're a player, you just go in and do what you have to do and you're trying to find a way of being selected, you know. You train hard, you try and produce on the park. And
do you remember your debut for Australia? Who was it against?
Give us a clue.
Was it Rangers? Was that your B team versus Rangers? Or because it looks like I'm looking at the list and you seem to play Rangers about the first four times.
Yeah, we played Rangers in Adelaide and we played Rangers. We moved around with Rangers. We travelled with Rangers. Yeah, yeah. So we got to know...
That would have been fun for
that
a Celtic
would have been fantastic.
No, well, look, they got to know, learn from playing against them that I was a mad Celtic supporter, so I copped a bit from them. I mean, a funny story, I'll delete the language, but I think it was Adelaide we played in and we'd moved around with them city to city, and one of their... Jock Wallace, I don't know if you've heard of Jock Wallace, ex-commando, SAS or whatever he was, Rangers, turned Rangers around, and we were... packing the bags onto the bus in Adelaide, and our bus was like 50 metres away from the Rangers bus, and he's standing where the bags are going in, and he's looked down and I'm putting my bag in, and he's shouted down in his best Scottish sort of brogue, "Egan, come here." So I thought, well, even although I'm a Celtic man, it's an honour. He's a great man. He's still a great man.
A sign of respect.
So I walked all the way over to the bus, and then when I got there, he says, "Now
hop off,
you little Fenian." A Fenian is a sort of,
not a term of endearment.
I'd walked that far. Yeah. There's no comeback from that. So I just put my tail between my legs and walked back to where I came from. No, but it was all in good fun. It was in jest.
At least he didn't get you to put his bags in.
It was in jest.
Very good. And so you went on the tour. You went overseas.
Yes, we went on the tour. As you know, later on I sort of came out and said a few things after the tour, and that was me sort of banished from the group.
What did you say?
Well, even to this day, you know, as you mature, you can look back at things and think you made a mistake. But look,
that's right.
Look, I still think, I don't think it was a mistake. After I said what I said, if people actually want to go back and have a look at the squads, it actually began to even out, because basically being involved,
was the gist of what the gist was
very Sydney orientated. There was a lot of politics being played, and there was guys being left out that shouldn't be left out. And I mean, for example, Dougie Brown was the top goal scorer in the country, got left behind. Peter Lewis was the best right back in the tournament and got left behind.
Yeah.
And there was guys in the squad that just done nothing. They were only there because they were at certain clubs, and it was a heavy representation from a few clubs in particular. And it wasn't really isolated. I mean, I still feel even to this day, watching the A-League, if you look at the commentary of your major TV shows, there's a very, very heavy slant towards Sydney. One with the Foxtel and two with SBS. I mean,
can't say I've ever noticed that.
You've never noticed that?
I know, but I am. I have got a cheeky grin on my face.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, look, it's...
Okay, yeah, it's head office is there too. Yeah. Yeah, but look, you know, it's an accusation that's been thrown
once or twice.
By others. Yeah. But...
just before you...
No, that's right.
This, I mean, even the disrespect that's been shown to Ange Postecoglou from the guys in the panels up in Sydney, I thought it was disgraceful. You know, it really turned round the national team. And if you're brutally honest, the material he had to work with wasn't the best.
Yeah.
Who could have done better than what he did? And I think at the end, I mean, I applaud Ange. Ange just got out and threw it back in the face. He got out before they got him. Again, my opinion. But looking from the outside, I just thought he was treated harshly and with disrespect. Because don't forget, he won the Asian Cup not too long ago. I mean, it's never been done.
That's fair. No, that's fair. So you reckon your career with the Socceroos was done once you spoke out? That was it? Your cards were marked.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's no way back. If you open your mouth, then
that's fair enough.
You know, but
no, that's it's good stories. But we'll get more of those very, very soon. We're with Charlie Egan here on the Pioneers, great legend, and very nice to hear him talk with George Kotsanis and Rodrigo sitting in for the great George Denikian here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Kotsanis, no call, score. Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run, shoots 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Bath blasts.
Yes, it's it!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Bozanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Nice to have you along here on The Pioneers. We're with NSL and Socceroo great. I'm going to call you Socceroo great. Charlie Egan.
He is.
Organ man at the door.
No, well, you deserve to be lauded here tonight. But we've been talking about a lot of great stuff. But off Twitter at FNR underscore radio, Vangeli Footballopoulos is the name. He wants us to ask you, Charlie, what type of coach was Len McKendry?
All coaches have got different qualities, and they all bring something to you. Some are good on the track, some are good in the dressing room. You know, they've all got strengths and weaknesses. Lenny was a superb technician, absolutely superb technician. I think the better players Lenny had, the better coach he was. He just got the best out of the team, as in, how could I put it, tactically, you know, he was, and he brought something to your game, you know, he taught me. I mean, when I came out here, I was, I'd done a lot of things off the cuff, which basically in Scotland, you get the ball and you dribble and you do it, but with Lenny, he sort of taught me how to receive the ball and make particular runs, and yeah, he was a top coach.
You're a coach. You've been a coach for a long time as well. Did you model some of the stuff that you learned from him on yourself?
No, you take bits and pieces mm-hmm. from everybody that you've played under, and everybody's got their own method of play. My theory on coaching in general is that there is no right and no wrong. It's what works for you with that group of players. I just sort of listen to some people on TV, well, especially here now, if you don't play like Barcelona, then nobody wants to. I like to watch all different types of football. I mean, I respect the fact that Ireland went to a World Cup and got robbed of a semi-final place by playing a long ball into Niall Quinn in a knockdown and, you know, two or three passes. And that should be respected. That man used the limited resources he had to take that group. Yep. To the maximum. But he's not going to play like Barcelona because he's not got the tools, you know. So to me, a good coach is one that adapts to the players and uses what he has, you know.
Yeah. It'd be remiss of us not to spend a bit of time talking about your move to Juventus, right? South Melbourne, and then you went to Juventus, Brunswick Juventus. Tell us about your time there. What made you move? What was the reason?
Yeah, it was a funny one because at the time, at South Melbourne Hellas, I'd been made the captain, and we were playing a cup game, and there wasn't agreement made on a payment, so the players were all complaining. Now it didn't affect me because I had the contract and that was fine, but being the captain of Hellas at the time, the players asked me to go and sort of represent them, and put to the committee that they wanted some remuneration for this cup game. So I went in and asked the question, and then the committee says, look, leave it with us, get back to us. So the committee came in the dressing room, asked the question, and no one put their hand up. So it made it look like it was me, Gary McDowell backed me up. And I was quite disappointed with a lot of the players at the time then, because I thought, hang on, you've sent me in as your rep. and then you've hung me when I've come back.
Two steps back, so,
but it was at a time where there was things in place at Hellas where they needed to turn over staff. So, I mean, I loved Hellas, I still do. There was no bad feelings. I thought, that's it, I've got to go. I can't stay here. Big Gary was the same, so... to make it easy, Hellas packaged up me and Gary McDowell and sort of offloaded us, and Juventus came in. So, it made it easy for me going to Juventus because I was very good friends with Joe Caruso, who was the president at the time. Joe was a terrific man. He's one of the best.
Good football man, wasn't he? Yeah.
Like, terrific human being. I used to call up to his travel agents and Sunshine of Lunchroom, and he's just a great man. I could have went to Preston. Preston offered me a lot more money than Juventus, but I mean, Joe just said, look, you know, you've got to come here. So me and Gary went there, and yeah, we had a good time at Juventus as well. With some good players there. Met a a whole sort of new group of people. And that's what it's about in the game, as you know. You just
the people you meet along the
people
way.
The people you meet, you know, you meet different characters. The majority of people I've met in the game have been good people. Just very, very few would cross the road to get away from, you know.
Who were some of the players at Juventus back then when you played?
One of the disappointing things of going to Juventus was having to run against Andrezzini.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a greyhound.
I was hoping you'd mention him.
You know, I actually got, we're talking about stories before and coaches. John Margaritis was one of our coaches, and John was just, he was just a comedian, you know. He used the broken English to his advantage. I'm convinced he was fluent in English.
He just, wily old fox.
Yeah, he used that. So Frank Arak had sent down a running program to the boys the other night. Frank Arak sent down a running program to Melbourne, and John had to follow it. So he's pulled out the paper and he's looked, and it was something along the lines of 4,100 metre sprints, and they all had to be done in this particular time. It was insane. So John said, oh, well, that's what he wants. So he's put the cones out and he's marching out, pacing out 100 metres. But unbeknown to John, we're walking behind John with the cones. So by the time John marched out, it was actually 80 metres.
Beautiful.
So he lined up the first group of players. And of course, Andrezzini's in the front group. John's played a whistle. We could see him up the top. And they went over the line. I think it was Andrezzini, Ernie Tappai. There was a few flyers there. And John stopped, and he's got to stop watching. He's looking at it, scratching his head, wandering around and looking in the air. Then he's just waved all the players up. So we've walked up, and he says, boys, what's the world record for 100 metres? I think Andrew's running about 7.9.
We need to get him into the Olympics. He's going to win it.
He's only run 80 metres.
We're going to run out of time, and you've had a long coaching career.
Yeah.
Werribee, Albion, Yarraville, Altona City. Yeah. We're not going to squeeze it in, unfortunately. It happens to us every week on this show.
Yes.
But you've given so much to the game since you've been here. So well over 35 years, 36. I don't know what my maths is like, but thank you for that and well done. And you're still giving with Barnstonworth.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations to the guys at Barnstonworth. And get on the Barnstonworth website and see if we can help out with their charity work.
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't even get to, I did some research on some of your ex-players as well, who,
yes,
you know, that you coached. And, you know, they still haven't recovered from the 4,200s, the 24,400s, the 8,1K runs.
Name names.
Well, there's one that I do a radio show with who lost his groins because... Well,
he's not run out of breath because I listen to him every day.
He definitely hasn't run out of
never
breath.
Never runs out of breath.
But Charlie, it's been an absolute joy, as George said. Congratulations on your career and keep it going because I'm sure all the guys could have you on for another hour.
The game's better for it.
Absolutely. No,
pleasure's on, mate.
Thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure joining you, George.
Thank you, Rodrigo. It's been a pleasure to have you on. The two Sunshine Boys.
Yeah.
Our first chance to work together. Thanks for being such a great host and... We'll see you all next week when I have Sunshine City legend Wilf Lang on the show.
This has been the Pioneers on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Bucciadas, no call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick.
Launches a rocket!
Trimboli, what vision!
Marth blasts.
Yes! And Zic!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Mazanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR Football Nation Radio.